This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Live Off the Record with Chivago Lang is sponsored by Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Burger King, Royal Star Assurance, and Atlantis Paradise Island.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this a beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call at all on the show today, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316. 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Let me tell you something. We'll never let your mommy have to call you and say, man, how come you ain't checking for me? You know there's trigger something in your head, right? Made it, you ain't do your duty today or a couple of days or so and so, but not that I talked to her since yesterday, but you know, when the hours lapse in between, I get that call. Say, welcome, you ain't checking for me, and you better listen and check. Hey, mommy, how you doing? All is well. You can also catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. So, a couple of things. You know, I know that we had a horrible weekend just passed with several murders having taken place. And honestly, no, we're not as a society, so impacted, well, so shocked, that's the word, shocked by that anymore. Some people say we are numb to it. I don't think that that is true at all. I don't think that people are numb to it. I don't think it is a feature of the human mind that once acquainted with certain realities, that the human mind is able to adapt to the reality of that reality. Okay, so it's like, let me tell you, when I was a child, a young boy, 7, 8, 9, maybe, I don't know, could be 10, my father suffered a massive stroke. And when he left to go to the hospital, I only saw my father as he was. Though at the time I could see that he was unwell, I knew what I saw of him going to the hospital was my normal father. But when he went to the hospital, suffered a stroke, I was so young, I was in, like my older brother, who was in and out of the hospital with, you know, while they were visiting him and so forth. I think to my recollection, I may have been to the hospital one time, and I do not recall actually seeing him, though I think I may have been allowed one time in the room to see him. But still, this was my father, and I saw nothing different. So much other than that he was in the hospital bed and whatever they would have for a stroke victim. So he would eventually get out of the hospital and have to go into New Providence. Well, he actually landed in New Providence and then had to go into New Providence for therapy, which he did for some while. So I hadn't seen him prior to his going to the hospital and returning from therapy. But when he returned, my father could not speak. He could only mumble words, as you know, so many stroke victims suffer from. His left side was paralyzed and so forth. He couldn't walk. He was in a wheelchair at that point, though over time, the therapy, he came to walk with a significant limp. So when I first saw that and saw him, that shocked me. This was not a reality that I had known. And so I was shocked. Over time, though, as I interacted with my father, same physical disability he had, it became nothing. This was life. And as I saw other stroke victims, this was life. I wasn't shocked by it anymore. This is the human mind. It has the capacity to adapt to almost anything. Men go off to war. Their bodies are brutalized by some violent attack. They lose arms and legs and eyes and so forth, and they adapt. I saw a gentleman while I was in the United States of America. Listen to me. If you had told me this could actually be, I would have told you, you are talking nonsense. I was in Publix shopping, and this gentleman had bandages on his face, but you could literally see a hole in his face. And he was shopping, walking about shopping, carrying his stuff. Now, for me, that was a shocker to see. But for him, this was his life. This was him. This was his normal living. I was in Peru. And I once saw a documentary on National Geographic with a man with extensive tumors, such that really all you could see is his eyes, because the tumor pretty much was his face. And while I was walking in the park area, I saw him. I literally saw the man I saw on National Geographic. Now, for me, on seeing him, I was stunned. I mean, my brain was trying to come to grips with what I was seeing. But this man was interacting with the stuff of people in the market as per normal, because they were used to it. My point here is that it isn't that the human mind becomes so much numb, as in no longer care, no longer sensitive to, but it now adapts to the fact that, you know what? The Bahamas is not a place where murders don't happen. It is not a place where multiple murders don't happen. It's not even a place where quadruple murders don't happen, and in brutal fashion. And so you, like, once your brain embraces that reality, when it happens, it's not that you're not saying that's sad, that's sick, that's terrible. Your brain has said, you know what, we have seen this before. And it is a protective mechanism that says, this is not a danger that you're not familiar with anymore. And so I think that's what's happened to us. We're no longer that innocent place where our experiences of certain realities are no longer unique. And that is what we have. And we have a country with people, sadly, who can and are willing, for whatever reason, like Cain killing Abel, they are willing to end a lives in whatever fashion. This is our reality. It is not unique to ourselves, but it is our reality, and it is troubling. No doubt, nonetheless. And sadly, just as we have seen it happen before and play itself out, and said on that occasion, how awful, terrible, what should we do? Why isn't the police doing enough? Here we go again. And I'm always amazed. Is the police doing enough? Is the question. is the police to, okay, for all the days when you don't have a murder, why don't you say, maybe the police is doing enough? But then you have a murder, a couple, a few, and then is the police doing enough? Like, what, I mean, let's be real now, people. Let's be intelligent about this. I imagine with more intelligence and with more work and with more stuff, it is conceivable that some things could be prevented. But can you have better peering eyes than God's? Can you have better eyes, better presence? We say God is all present. We say God is all knowing. Well, apparently all of that all present and all knowing wasn't sufficient to stop Cain from killing Abel. I wonder, was God not doing enough? If we are Bible-believing people, was he not doing enough? So really, this, I don't know altogether what the solution is. What I do know is I'm thankful that somebody is doing sufficient to ensure that 9 out of 10 Bahamians are not running around violently attacking each other, committing murder. I am grateful to God for that. Whatever the reasons are, you meet 10 young men, the chances of one of them killing you, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8 of them killing you, it's very, very slim. Thank goodness for that. Right? So really, we're sad for the families and all that they have to go through with these things. It's very, very, very troubling. This text says the police ain't put no gun in a murderer hand. Exactly. I mean, it is really something that we would go there, right? Police. The police, there's about, let's say there's 3,000 police officers on the force. 3,000. All right? Policing a society of 389,000. Well, let's just do the adult population, which let's say that's half of the adult, of the population, right? So that's a half of, they're almost 200,000, right? So there's 3,000 police officers. That's 3 police officers for 66 persons. Now, let's suppose we could assign 3 police officers to every 67 people. What do you think that a police could stop 67 people from doing any number of different things if their mind is set on committing a crime? Anybody believes that? It's true. So can you watch 67 people? We have teachers who tell us today it is very difficult to deal with a class of 30 persons. This child doing that, the next child doing that, and all the children are in one class. And the teacher is still having challenges to be able to command it. Well, 67 people live in, some live out east, some live out west, some live out north, some live out south, some live in high-end apartments, some live in low-end apartments, some live in homes, and so forth and so forth. And the police is going to, with just those 67 persons, be able to prevent things from happening in any significance, especially if somebody is secretively minded to go do it? Really? But the United States of America has as extensive a terrorist network as you could find. I mean, terrorist intelligence capabilities as you could find. They discover many terrorist plots. Many. They don't discover all. They don't prevent all. And I'm talking about homegrown terrorism and external terrorism. Why? Because the whole point of people who are intent on evil, on wickedness, is to disguise themselves so as not to be detected. In fact, they don't want the people who they're going to be violent toward know that they are going to be violent toward them, so they do everything secretively. So let's be real, let's be reasonable, let's be sensible in our society, and let's acknowledge and be aware of the fact that we have within our midst people who are prepared to do all that is necessary to advance some wicked cause and not be detected in the process. And this is what our police officers and law enforcement people have to contend with. And that's why these things happen. God could prevent these things from happening. He could. But he would have to violate the one choice he's made in respect to people. He gave them free will. He'd have to take the free will away and say, no, you will only do what I tell you to do and instinctively command you and enable you to do, and then you wouldn't be human being no more. You'd be basically a sophisticated biological machine with no free will. So you see, the problem when we go to some of these notions that we go to is that it prevents us from having a realistic appreciation of the world in which we live. So why are we shocked by some things? You, your own selves, me and you. One day we are wonderful creatures, just calm and collective, and then we get angry and bust off all kind of crap and nonsense, et cetera, and some people are wondering, who is that? Who's that person? Where did that person come from? And nobody could have stopped it because they didn't even have a clue. In your head, you were prepared to go there. This is the world in which we live. This is the human species. This is the human creature. This is the creation of God. I want you to consider. I don't know why. I don't know how we get stunned. I really do not know how. And I'm not talking about the folks who don't believe. I'm talking about Bible-believing folks. How you get stunned by the things that happen in our world when a creature made by God called Lucifer, who was more beautiful than all the angels in heaven, lusted after God's throne and was thrown out of heaven for doing so. And in that perfect grand place we are trying to get to, that happened. And we are stunned. We are stunned. Cain killed Abel. And after that, men was killing and brutalizing each other for millennia. And we are still stunned? Really? No, we shouldn't be stunned. What we should be is dedicated, motivated, and moved to do all we can within the circles that we have to influence the outcome of the choices of the people we can influence, most especially our children. We ain't gonna get all of them, but the more we get, the better off we'll be. That's why our society is really not as violent a society as it could be, because too many parents, thank you parents, have done their jobs. Too many schools have done their jobs. Thank you schools. Too many churches have done their jobs. Thank you churches. Too many government entities and agencies have done their job. Thank you, government agencies and entities. Too many things have happened positively to impact the lives we have so that we can make better choices. And we who are shocked are among the people who are the beneficiaries of some of that influence. Right in the Bahamas. But nobody runs around going, oh, they're doing that. What happened there? How come you are doing such a great job? How come you are not one of the violent ones? How come you? Because you are. Because somebody did something. And because you are making choices, better choices. It's Texas, great show as usual. Mr. Lang, there is no punishment in NASA for murder. Let me rephrase that. There is no serious or strict punishment for murder in NASA, because sitting in Fox Hill prison for less than 6 months and getting fat and cell phone and jail ain't too serious punishment. So you think punishment would fix it? That's what you thought? But God punish. But how did God deal with Cain? God destroyed the whole earth, left 8 people. Was murder stopped after that? Hello? Hi. Listen, man, you all are missing the point. You're missing the point. You're missing the point. Human beings make choices. Some of them have been significantly punished, and then there are those who argue that that punishment actually was a motivator to their violent tendencies. Too simplistic. All you have to do is observe the human reality and you'll know this is just too simplistic. Oh, it's the parents. How's the parents in order to house key and the priest underpin? Oh, it's the people ain't got no job. But what is stealing by way of employment? That means you own a job and steal it. Oh, it's the environment. What environment? From over the hill has come many a grand and great souls, even still to this day. Just because you're in the ghetto don't mean the ghetto got to be in you. And I'm not saying over the hills ghetto. I'm just saying, as an example, just because you're in a ghetto doesn't mean the ghetto got to be in you. It's nonsense. Oh, these people, they need Jesus Christ. They need to be in the church. And nobody in the church ever commit no crime, et cetera, and so forth and so forth. But Jap, you ain't need me to tell you no stories because Shabbat was online. Spent many years in churches. What do you mean that nonsense? The fact of the matter is, every time you come up with some reason, you find that there's an exception or more than an exception, sometimes rules in relation thereto. You get the Church of Jesus Christ and all the Christians, and they're getting more, first of all, they're getting as many divorces as non-believers. They are living in many miserable marriages as non-believers. So what is it? Because human beings are complex. That's what God knows. That's what God knows. Human beings are so complex that God was frustrated and angry enough to destroy the whole earth with a flood. We believe, and kept only 8 souls alive. At one point, he wanted to destroy Israel, who he had rescued out of Egypt for their disobedience. If y'all don't get it, you'll never get it. And you'll always be coming up with all these very simplistic solutions to things which are far more complicated and far more sophisticated than you and I any day. And we keep being shocked by things we shouldn't be shocked about. We should observe and know and say, ask ourselves, what can I do in my own space to help? So, Mr. Lang, no government we had in the last 20 years was serious about carrying out capital punishment. Now I know you will say you really think capital punishment will stop the murders. My answer is no, but they will at least think twice before doing it. Yeah. Yeah, you have evidence of that. Okay. It's a great show. Okay. Yeah. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabbat Berlin, your host. When we come back, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
Babe, you mosh the car?
I ain't mosh the car. The lady run into me mosh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
BK Nassau and Pepsi want to bring you a fun day on us. Upgrade your favorite combo and get a chance to win great prizes like staycations at Atlantis or Bahamar, powerboat adventure excursions, or a Blue Lagoon dolphin encounter. You can also win a relaxing day at Sandy Toes or a VIP movie experience at Fusion. Upgrade your combo at any of BK Nassau's 7 locations and enter to win at bk242.com. Win fun days with Pepsi and Burger King, where taste is king.
Hello?
Yes, it's time. I know, a lot sooner than we thought. Well, that's thanks to those returns from my RF Mutual funds. You know they have some of the best performing funds in the market. Yep, with what I've been earning, I can finally set a date for my product launch. Draft the paperwork, I'm on my way.
Reach your financial goals sooner with RF Mutual Funds. Sign up by November 29th for a chance to win $1,000. Find out more at rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4316 or 325-4259, 325-4259. So I want to provide some clarity on something, because it was reported, at least in one of the dailies, not the Guardian, that the government's decision to go ahead with the reduction of the VAT was given an okay by the University of the Bahamas' study. So I wanted to put that into some perspective, because if that was what was intended to be indicated, it was clearly a erroneous reading of the study, okay? Clearly, I want to say that. So I wanted to read for you the study's conclusion on the VAT matter. This is what the study said. It's reading from the executive summary of the study. It says, following a special request by the Ministry of Finance, a simulation exercise was carried out for changing the VAT rate. The simulations advanced a reduction of the VAT rate from 12% to 10%, which is a scenario 19. I'll explain these for you. And a VAT rate increase from 12% to 14% scenario 20. The objective of the simulation exercise was to estimate the implications for the economy, specifically the value added, real GDP, fiscal surplus, slash deficit, debt to GDP, current account, inflation, unemployment, poverty level, and Gini index. It was found that reducing the VAT rate by 2 percentage points from 12% to 10% shows only slight improvements in the real GDP, unemployment rates, prices, and poverty levels. Shows only slight improvements in the real GDP, unemployment rates, prices, and poverty levels. There is, however, a worsening of the current account, the fiscal deficit, and the debt to GDP ratio. There is no change in the Gini ratio. I'll explain that later. If, this is the study, if the priority is to benefit the economy, even if only slightly, the VAT reduction should be pursued. However, at the same time, there must be compensating tax revenue initiatives to address the rise in the deficit and the debt to GDP ratio. That's what the study said. Okay? So let me give you some background to this study. You would know, some of you might know, that months ago, maybe 4-5 months ago, bear in mind the election just happened about a month ago. So this happened under the previous administration. The Government and Public Policy Institute, specifically myself, was called by the Ministry of Finance, the Financial Secretary, seeking a study to inform the government as to what levels of growth would be necessary in order to reverse and to achieve sustainable fiscal and economic metrics. Okay? That was the request. So we provided a proposal to the Ministry of Finance to conduct that study, and the Ministry of Finance accepted our proposal to do so. So we had from that time to very recent been working on that study, which provided the Ministry of Finance with short-term recovery simulations, medium and long-term economic growth simulations, and based on a computable general economic equilibrium, general equilibrium model. Okay? And so while we were in the process of that, completing that study, of course, the election happened, the government changed, and the new administration rightly said, listen, let us ask the Government and Public Policy Institute to simulate this VAT reduction in a number of ways. VAT reduction just with from 12% to 10%, but nothing else changing, 12% to 10% over just say 1 year, 12% to 10% over the study period, which was in about 9 years, or and of reduction 12% to 10%. With zero rated exemptions being removed, so forth and so forth. And we did that. We did that exactly that. And we gave the schedule of our findings to the government to make its decision and use in making its decision. And our findings was, as I read, that ultimately a reduction was going to worsen the government's fiscal circumstances if no compensating revenue measures were taken, and that there would be slight benefits to the economy, which if the government deemed that a priority, then it could go ahead and make the cut. All right? So this study is posted on the Ministry of Finance's website, I might add. It is there. I heard discussions about where to find it. It is on the site, but the problem is that the document is so heavy, because there's a lot of data, graphs, and so forth, that it takes a long time to upload. And so we are making attempts to compress that document so that it'll be less difficult for people to upload when they go to the ministry's site. It is the ministry's study, so it was for them to release it, as we were contracted to do this work, and we did the work, and we sent the study report on to the ministry. There were three of us from the university working on this study, and three consultants from the university and one consultant from Peru are working on this study. The model, without being too technical about it, essentially takes your real data. So this is for those people, oh, what is theorizing? No. The model takes your real data over, we use data from 1989. Okay, 1989. That would be almost 30 plus years worth of data. All kinds of data, right? And we use that data. This is all your economic data. We use that to build. Some of that data comes from statistics. Some comes from the central bank and other government agencies, Internal Revenue. And that's why any number of their technicians were consulted with in order to ensure we could get the data required to do what? You cannot really use a simulation exercise unless you have a baseline. A baseline is simply your starting point. So for instance, when you say, okay, you started in 1989 with a unemployment of X, then you went to this and that over the years, and now you're looking forward, you're saying you'll get here based on a reference to your baseline. That's what the base. So you don't do anything in the way of modeling without establishing a realistic and reliable baseline using real data. And the model has to be calibrated in such a way that it can reasonably reasonably predict your historical data if you put the required variables in the simulation, because that's how you know it's capturing the dynamics of your economy, meaning it's capturing the movements between various outputs and various inputs, right? So that, you know, let me give you a simple example. We know in economics, we know this. We know that generally when people get more money, they spend more. We call that the wealth effect. Now, that doesn't mean only wealthy people spend more. That means if a poor person comes into $400 having had nothing, they will spend more. Someone who has $10,000 who comes into $20,000 will spend more. We call that the wealth effect. So, but what economists try to do is to see whether there is some mathematical relationship between the amount of wealth somebody might get and the amount of spending they may get. So for instance, if their wealth increases 10%, is their spending an increase 10%, which means it's proportional, or will it increase 20%, which means it's greater than proportional, or will it increase by 5%, which means it's less than proportional? It's all increases, but what is the relationship between the wealth and the spending? And so what you try to do in these models is capture mathematical relationships between various factors and the outcomes you see. So for us, it'll be like, what's the impact of greater tourism receipts on your current account, on your employment, on your inflation, and these kinds of things? And so when you crunch these numbers using these modeling, you get an estimation of those relationships that now allows you to simulate, well, what if tourism receipts went up this amount? What if investments went up this month? What if you get government investment in renewables going up this way? You get outcomes based on the model that you've simulated. And so that's what we did. We built the model, and then we used the simulation to try and see what set of policy measures could produce the kind of metrics that would say the Bahamas is in a good place. And I want to talk to you about what those metrics might look like if the Bahamas was in a good place. All right? We're going to continue this after the news break, but let me start it for you. So if you were in a good place, economically and fiscally speaking, what might you look like? What might this country look like? So let's give some numbers, because you're looking at measurable things. Now, if these measures happen and you still don't feel good in the country, that's a different story, right? That could be psychological. We can only deal with measurable things. I can't measure your particular satisfaction with life in the country. So, for instance, if the country was in a good economic and fiscal place, we might have growth, economic growth, of the order of 3% or more. Okay, so on an annual basis, over time, we're growing at 3% or more. That's a good place for us. Secondly, our unemployment level would be reducing to below 7%. So we got growth at 3% or more and unemployment reducing to 7% or less. That's a good place for the country, good place. We'd have inflation at about 2% or lower. That's a good place. That means your cost of living isn't going to be impacted significantly from year to year. That's a good place. You would have a GFS deficit, meaning the government's deficit after you consider debt redemption would be below 2%. That's a good place. If your government is doing less than 2% on an annual basis in terms of GFS deficit, it's a good place for us. You're reducing the debt to GDP level to below 60%. So if you are debt to GDP below 50%, 60%, more desirably nearer 50%, you're in a good place in the country. And if you're reducing poverty to irreducible levels, you're in a good place, right? Whatever your measure of poverty is. And if you're improving income distribution as measured by the Gini coefficient, that Gini index, it measures what percentage of your population is making what percentage of your income. And the smaller the percentage of the population making a bigger portion of your income, the more unequal is income distributed in your society. Well, a Gini coefficient of a below 30% is a good place. The higher it is, if it's one, you're perfectly unequal, meaning one person making all the money in the country. If you're at 0%, then that means that everybody's making an equal amount of money in the country, an equal amount of the income. 30% is a good place. It means essentially that the larger portion of your income is being made by that 70% of your population, and that's a good place. So a good place in terms of an outcome from these scenarios would be producing metrics with numbers like the ones I just talked about. 3% growth or more, unemployment below 7%, inflation at or below 2%, GFS deficit levels below 2%, reducing the debt to GDP to below 60%, reducing poverty to irreducible levels, an income distribution as measured by your Gini coefficient below 30%, that's a good place. Has the Bahamas ever been there? The closest that I can tell you the Bahamas was to these metrics was in but that period between 1997 and 2001. That's the closest we've ever been in terms of all those collective measures. collective memories. That's the closest we've been that I'm aware of that I could have seen in the data. Okay. But we didn't sustain that. And this is the key, that we were there for a period of time, but we didn't sustain it. Going forward, we collapsed on that. And the question is, can we get there and sustain it? Now, things happen to get you out of whack, and that could get you out of whack for a year or so. But the idea is, can you over 10, 15 years sustain this? Listen to me, folks. If we could get there, well, you'd be smiling. You're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break from news. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about this study. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z-Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us at all on the show today, please feel free to do so on any of the following numbers. You can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 4224796, or you can WhatsApp me on 4393043. Let me say as a general rule that I am really pleased that the government, and in this instance, both the former and current administrations, have embraced this. And in fact, the Christie administration did a similar something, embraced this, the idea of looking to economic models for providing guidance in some policy making. Not saying that they are doing it in every instance, but certainly in this instance that I can account for, that it has been done. It was done in respect of the value-added tax introduction, and it was done in respect of some considerations under the World Trade Organization. And now under the former administration, in consideration of the economic prospects and fiscal prospects going forward, and in this instance now in the case of the VAT, we need that kind of objective studied methodology in trying to arrive at our decisions in respect to some policies. Models are not perfect. We don't live in a perfect world. You got a perfect information to make perfect decisions, and the models, and no human being is there. But they can be more reliable than simply winging it. And that's the reason why we have sought to apply ourselves to it. And we, at the University of the Bahamas, were delighted to be called upon to provide this study in that way. The study has provided some policy suggestions. It simulated a number of outcomes. What would happen if the country had investment increase of the order of X percent? What could happen if we were more reliant on renewables? What would happen if the government's tax expenditure decreased? What would happen? So any number of scenarios, and then we look at what the how the metrics moved when we simulated each of those separately. And then we came to have a collective set of simulations, a simulation that that included a set of those things and what the outcome was, and we provided that to the government. And I can tell you something that I've been saying for a while, that if you look at our short-term economic outcome and prospects, recovery, nothing is more important to that than tourism. There's no simulation that could suggest anything other than in the short term, even into your medium term, tourism is your beast, a burden to get you forward. And the simulations would bear that out. But going beyond that, we have to have investments in multiple areas and multiple sectors of the economy and that kind of stuff. And so I don't want to get too deep into it, but the study would demonstrate that a combination of significant levels of investments in multiple sectors and combined with investments in renewable energy as a source of fuel for the country, combined with a reduced tax expenditure on the part of government, not expenditure. Now, this is where the government gives tax concessions and it is able to curb those, and an emphasis on improving total factor productivity, as we call it, in economics, that those combinations get us in 9 to 10 years in the area that we, those targets that I mentioned earlier. Now I know my brother Juan, as an example, mentioned the surplus possibility in 10 years and saw that as unbelievable something. Now, and I can understand why he would believe that, because there's nothing in our history to suggest that we could arrive at a surplus in 10 years. But remember now, these models are not politicians making choices like, I'm going to do Junglenoo Carnival and didn't budget for it. Like, I'm going to buy Alukaya and didn't budget for it. The model ain't that kind of thing. The model says, if you continue on this trajectory, all things being equal, you will get here. Now, if you decide to jump in the middle and do something different, you can get something different. But the model creates a path if you want to get a certain place. Now, the model will give you numbers like $400 million in surplus. Will you be exactly there? No, of course not. It's a trajectory. You could be higher than $400 million. You could be lower. But you will head in that direction. All things being equal, you don't jump in and do nonsense or do something that will adversely impact the trajectory that the model predicts. Okay, so again, I can understand why there could be a reaction that way, because do you really believe that we would have a surplus in this country in 10 years? Chances are you won't believe it, but the model says it is possible. And it's possibility that fuels and motivates effort if you take on the possibility done, you have to be disciplined to get there. Meaning, when y'all kick up and fuss up and decide y'all want this and you want that and you want the next thing, if the politicians are minded to reach the target and say, well, that thing you're asking me to do might not get us there unless I sacrifice this. If you are not prepared to do that, then you can't reach your target. Okay, so these simulations are not perfect. They can be questioned. They can be refuted, but they represent at least an intellectual effort at more objectively looking at what the policy options and opportunities are. And the government has a full-fledged such study. It required a great deal of work, a great deal of effort. And I want to thank all those technicians from the various government entities, the Ministry of Finance, Central Bank, Department of Statistics, Inland Revenue, and all who participated, all the consultants of Rome, was Dr. Olivia Saunders of the University of the Bahamas, Dr. Trey Lam of the University of the Bahamas, and Dr. Jorge Campo Domico of Peru, all of whom were participants and consultants on the project to provide that input. Now here's the great thing about the project. The model is now there. All that has to happen any given period of time is you update the baseline so that you can continue to use the model. So now the government of the Bahamas could scenario any set of things in relation to seeing what the probable outcome would be if such and such happened. And training is going to be delivered as a part of this study to a group of public officers to use the model. That's the great thing. It's not a model you put on the shelf. It's a model you use as a tool in public policy planning. Hence the Government of Public Policy Institute being delighted to be a part of that process. Right? So if somebody said, oh, I wonder what happens if we have income tax, you could simulate that in the model. Oh, I wonder what would happen if tourism declined by 50%. You go and simulate that in the model. At least you simulate the receipts. You see, because remember now, the question was, what level of growth would be required for the government, for the country to achieve more sustainable metrics that spoke to our economic and fiscal health? Well, you might think the answer is a simple mathematical calculation of what it takes to get the GDP to grow from this point where it is now to a certain point where the debt to GDP ratio is, say, below 60%. You'd think that that's a simple, it is a relatively simple calculation. However, GDP doesn't just grow. Things have to happen for it to grow. And there are things that can happen for it to grow that can have an adverse effect on other things. Let me give an example. Let's suppose that tourism in the Bahamas grew enormously and therefore required a great deal of the labor in the country to satisfy the labor demand in tourism. Okay, you say that's a great thing. Oh, bless the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Tourism is booming, all kinds of jobs. Okay, well, first of all, now here's what happened. You've now got contractors who say, man, listen, man, construction ain't really, really, really. So I going into tourism. You get other people in the gas stations, I'm going into tourism. No, going into tourism. Now you have shortages in those areas. Also now, because the demand for labor is so great, you start bidding up the price of labor. Where you start bidding up the price of labor, that's going to fuel an inflationary effect on your economy. So is it that you just want a tourism boom, or do you need a tourism growth that is also matched by something that is driving or containing inflation? You see? You see how it ain't so simple now? That's why the model has to take into account, the simulations have to take into account these things, because this, when you do the simulation with just tourism, it tells you, yeah, here's what you get in the way of growth, but look at what happened to inflation. And now you have to compensate for that, right? And so And so this is the fantastic opportunity that exists for policymakers in having one tool at their disposal among other tools to be able to make policy decisions and to make it. I have to commend the administration too for not hoarding the study, but actually publishing it so quickly and making it available to the society. I am not seeing that too often, but. There was no recommendation to cut fat by the study. There was no recommendation to raise fat by the study. The study had findings, and the findings simply revealed that depending on your priority, you go one direction or the other. That was the finding. Okay, and any suggestion that there was a recommendation in any direction would simply be taking liberties with the findings of the study and what have you. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Child, Johnny Mo's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep. Sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of.
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody, everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together, through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone, holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us, please feel free to do so on any of the following numbers. You can call us on 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or you can call us on 325-4316, 325-4316. Or you can call us on 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We have some text here I'm going to read for you. This text says, good evening, Mr. Lang. I'm trying to understand exactly where you're headed with your rationale, where I am headed with my rationale. So many countries who are atheists have much less violence than our small country per capita. The world average is 5 murders per 100,000. We are averaging around 20 per 100,000, not to mention violence in other areas. We got to look at the legislation, policies, and programs, which are, in a lot of cases, are breeding criminals. Well, first of all, I am not making a judgment that Christianity has anything to do with it. I'm not making that judgment at all. I'm not talking about whether religion does or does not have any impact on the murders. I never made any such suggestions, so I'm not entirely sure what you were listening to. I only alluded to the fact that for people who believe in the Bible, that notwithstanding Almighty God was in Eden, where Adam and Eve were, where Cain and Abel were, that notwithstanding that, murder happened. That's all I was saying. And so you would think that God would have been vigilant enough to stop it. That's all I was saying. So I'm not arguing whether you get more or less violence because of Christianity at all. As a matter of fact, many of Christian, so-called Christian countries have, as you said, lots of violence and lots of other wickedness. So that's not my argument at all. At all. Okay? So, and you say we have to look at the legislation and we have to look at the policies. Well, why didn't God look at the policies and legislation and what have you so he could stop Cain from killing Abel? Is my point. Why? Do you know that there is a law against murder and there was still murder? Do you know that even when we were hanging in the Bahamas, we were still having murders? That's how come we could hang? Let me say this again, because some of you seem to miss it. We could hang people for committing murder because we had a law that was against murder, that made a punishment for murder hanging. And we still hung people. That's my point. You might get some people, you will prevent lots of people don't. Listen, lots of people in this country do not commit murder. Oh, the 99% of people in the Bahamas don't commit murder. Do not. Let me say it again, because some of you all do not commit murder. Okay, 99% of people. Why? It could be a ton of different reasons. So why you say the reason that the other people are murdering is because of the absence of law? Why is the vast majority of people then not murdering? You have to be able to critically think through these things. You have to be able to think, okay, let me test my own reasoning here, my own logic here. If people are murdering because the policies, the laws aren't adequate, then why are 99% of people not murdering in the absence of those things? That's called the scientific methodology. Texas, we want to know if survivors' benefit will also get an increase from NIB. It could only get an increase if the government says it wants to increase it. So if you didn't hear the government say that survivors' benefit will be increased, then it has not. if they didn't say so. Now, if there is some memo or something out there that says otherwise, please, if you're listening to the show from NIB, let us know. But no announcement has been made by the government to what that is. This text says, Gowan, maybe the USA has high performing rates because their interest rates lower. And we have always charged higher mortgage rates here. You will pay that $10 loss in your scenario from all that interest banks. Listen, that is very confusing, very confusing. You want to go at that again and try to write it a little more clearly for us, please. Says, good evening, Mr. Lang. I'm trying to understand. Oh, I read you before. Mr. Lang, we narrow the vastness of God in our tiny lens of location. The topic of murder does not exist in some countries because the murder rate is low. But this problem might be racism, child pornography, or some other heinous crime. All of these must occur during the end time. Rather than reaching flippant, we should be more concerned about what is God saying to us. When Cain killed Abel, what was God saying to us? God wasn't saying anything to us. Cain killed Abel out of jealousy and hatred. And then God spoke to Cain. God spoke to Cain before Cain killed Abel. You know that? So apparently, God having spoken to Cain didn't stop him from killing Abel. God said to Cain, Cain, why are you disturbed? If you do good, you will be commended for it. If you do not do good, sin lieth at your door. That's what God said to Cain. Then Cain went out and killed his brother. So God gave Cain good, sound advice and guidance, and then Cain went and killed his brother. So what are you saying? What are you saying? We have murders, and what is God saying to us? No. God has spoken to us a long time ago. Love your neighbor as yourself. God said, love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and body. God said, pursue righteousness. He said, do good, and so forth and so forth. So God has spoken to us a long time ago. You think God is speaking to us because a man, for whatever reason, kills another man? That's the eloquence of our God, to be able to speak to us like that? I'm sorry, my friend. I'm sorry. I bless your heart for all you're trying to convey, but I'm sorry. God is much more capable of speaking to us than through the wickedness of men. In fact, he condemns those kinds of acts. Says, hi, Shivago. I know of several deaths that were the result of families and friends seeking revenge for the death of their loved ones. This is common in many societies, so we should construct a place to voluntarily hold persons who feel that their lives are under threat of retaliation. We also need to try murder cases quickly so that the families and friends could feel a sense of satisfaction and closure. Great show. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. That people who feel their lives are threatened, there can be perhaps some better means of assisting them. I was speaking to some family members yesterday about the fact that they have to battle with the mental illness of a family member. Chronic battle with that family member. I mean, frankly, I know the situation up close, very up close, and it's a real chronic issue. Now, here's the dilemma. The police has been called for the person so often that now the police and the ambulance and those are kind of like little wary of the situation, right? And so, because you get the person contained, they may get treatment for a little while and they back, and then the cycle repeats itself. And now the family can't even call the police because the police knows the situation and says, we're going to just be out back at this. So the only way now the police can be called so that the person might be contained so that they might be treated is if they interfere with some stranger, the neighbor, or somebody calls, and then you are able to do something about that. And what it brought to light for me was really just how very, very challenging our situation is with mental illness, and how I am not sure, and I'm not casting any judgments on, I'm just saying I'm not sure whether we have the infrastructure in place to deal with our mental illness. I saw a young lady standing on the side of the road. Just she was dressed like in this dirty stuff from sheet, and I looked and I mean you can see she's young, and she's just there with her stuff and what have you. Then I drove down not too far, and a guy has made his home on the side of the road and so forth, right? And I am sure they have family members, but when I think, and I asked myself, well, where's the family? And I thought, okay, well, the family must be in a situation where, yes, you can take them in, and then they wander off, and or they maybe they're more difficult to really control. And, you know, it really is not a simple issue. It's a challenging issue. But I wonder, maybe where we can have more better resources to attend to these things, because, you know, in many instances, these mentally challenged people don't hurt themselves or don't hurt anybody. Many, many instances. But I have seen instances where, after many, many years of being about and not doing anything, somebody is injured or killed by some mentally challenged person. And some people have had said in some of those instances, the signs and the signals were there, but there was just not the infrastructure to respond to the situation adequately enough to prevent what eventually became a tragedy in the circumstance. And so it's a challenge, and it's one of those things that maybe even the university might give some attention to in terms of what are best practices, what might be done, so forth. And in some instances, listen, I can understand it, even though, you know, it is hard to accept. Some instances, family members, they just get tired, man. They get weird because they have not the sophisticated, they don't have the professional skills to deal with these mental challenges. They don't. And it worries them. And they love their family member, you know, they don't want to see, because they see this mental challenge as a suffering. And they don't like it. They don't want it. They don't want to see a family member in that scenario, but it is reality for them, and then there's nothing they can do. And so they suck it up, try to stick it out. So it's an excellent explanation of the decision-making and output of the report. Thank you. I was hoping I was clear enough about it. This text says, Mr. Lang, all I was saying in my text, we need to have harsher or more effective punishment for murder. That's just my opinion on that matter. I hear you. I hear you, but okay, I mean, if you think that's a... Cain killed Abel. Did God... Listen to me now. For the Bible believers now, I'm not saying everybody believes in the Bible, right? But the Bible believers. Cain killed his brother, his baby brother. Okay? Killed his brother. Did God execute Cain? In point of fact, when Cain said to God that you have put a curse on me such that any man seeing me will kill me, God put a mark on Cain such that no man who saw him would kill him. So in other words, in response to murder, God did exactly the opposite to what you are suggesting. Capital punishment. He did the opposite. You think you have the best way? I don't know. I'm just saying. Just saying. Right? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take another break. You're listening to See Live. I'm Chicago Live News. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody. Everybody. Come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this. Together.
Babe, you mashed the car?
I ain't mashed the car. The lady run into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
BK Nassau and Pepsi want to bring you a fun day on us. Upgrade your favorite combo and get a chance to win great prizes like staycations at Atlantis or Bahamar, powerboat adventure excursions, or a Blue Lagoon dolphin encounter. You can also win a relaxing day at Sandy Toes or a VIP movie experience at Fusion. Upgrade your combo at any of BK Nassau's 7 locations and enter to win at bk242.com. Win fun days with Pepsi and Burger King, where taste is king.
Hello? Yes, it's time. I know a lot sooner than we thought. Well, that's thanks to those returns from my RF Mutual funds. You know they have some of the best performing funds in the market. Yep, with what I've been earning, I can finally set a date for my product launch. Draft the paperwork, I'm on my way.
Reach your financial goals sooner with RF Mutual funds. Sign up by November 29th for a chance to win $1,000. Find out more at rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid. Take a stand, everybody, everybody. Come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, send you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you make it down the same road.
Gentlemen, to See Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796, so you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. It's 439-3043. One good sign in the country is that stopover tourism is nearing its pre-pandemic levels. And that's good news. That immediate recovery is what we desperately need. It's the surest, quickest way to get us on our way back to at least an economic level where we weren't the best off, but we certainly were better off than we were during the pandemic. And stopover is the one that you want to pay attention to. We need those cruise passengers back for sure, because they are a meaningful part. I don't, the people who like to argue about they don't spend as much. Now listen to me. If I'm getting $10,000 a month from something, and something else is giving me $1,000 a month, do you think that I am going to be ungrateful about the $1,000 extra? That's bills paid. That's revenue in, right? And so we need both. We like both. We like both, and we like both in great measure. But having the stopover return is a big sign that signal that people are having a level of comfort with your measures and your circumstances such that they're prepared to fly and stay a while with us. And that's a good thing. That's a necessary thing. Your surest and quickest way to better, economic better, is through tourism today. It's the structure of your economy, like it or lump it. It is what has fed us significantly over these years and brought us to this prominence where others have sought to come and live here above where they live in other places. And people have come and admired and basked in your development. A lot of that you can lay at the feet of tourism. And it is mostly these younger, God bless them, younger people who haven't known quite well the prosperity that tourism brought to us. You can't blame them. If you're a millennial, you have never lived in a Bahamian economy prospered by tourism. You've never lived in such an economy, never. You've never seen years of prosperity where good times were rolling, and people were just swimming in the cash from tourism. They've never lived in that kind of economy. So for them, we're too dependent on tourism. I understand it, because they ain't prospering in that kind of environment. So they don't see the tourists. They don't see the microtourism. Now, those who still live off of tourism, those who've spent all their years earning from tourism and schooling their children and providing a quality of life for their family, they know, like my mother, straw vendor. You ask her what tourism did for her. Ask her friends like the late Talitha Strawn. Ask them what tourism did for them. Ask all of them. There's plenty. They ain't the only one. They're not the only ones. Ask them. Ask a taxi driver. Ask Mr. Roman them what tourism did to them, for them. Ask the people of Majestic Tours and them. Ask them what tourism did for them. Of course, a millennial would not know that. They wouldn't. They didn't live in that kind of a society where tourism prospered them. So they live in a struggle. They've lived for 20 plus years in a struggling society, in economically struggling society. They don't even know, millennials, and it's not their fault. Millennials do not even know what it is like to travel away to school and have other people in the region look at you like you were something kind of special, think you were some kind of special because of your economic prosperity relative to theirs. They have no clue of that. When they go away now, they kind of like a little gun shy. Yeah, they come from the beautiful Bahamas, but they ain't that economic juggernaut that they used to be. So they don't know. Tourism for them is a one trick pony that probably needs to be shot and another couple of replacements be found. say, Mr. Lang, this text says, Mr. Lang, you are a very extremely unbiased individual. You learn to be unbiased, or is it by nature? I think that's why I enjoy your show. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much. I have biases, but I try when I'm looking at an issue to be objective, notwithstanding my bias. And I think I learned that over time. This isn't natural. I learned a lot of it over time to resist that bias. Now, many times I'm dogmatic about a point of view I have. I can get really rowdy, really passionate, sometimes too loud. And I can be offensive sometimes in the way I present an argument or debate, et cetera. And I know it's caused me some pain and some hardship and some dislike from family, friends, neighbors, the society. And so, I don't mean to be that way. I don't mean to bring offense, but it didn't happen. But I try to be objective, right? Recognize that there are other points of view in the world. There are other perspectives in the world. I had a very interesting experience the other morning. I was walking about 6:30 in the morning. And as I was walking, a younger man was walking behind me. And he greeted me. He said, Mr. Lang, how are you? And I greeted him back. And he slowed down. He said, I know that you probably don't want to be disturbed, but I have always wanted to ask you some questions. We're walking. He's walking. I said, fine, sure. We walked for about 20 minutes, and he asked questions away about, mostly about politics, about, perceptions about politics, about views and perspectives about politics. And several times he said to me, if I asked you this question, would you be honest with me? And so I said to him, listen, if I am unwilling to answer a question because I think it may be challenging, I will not answer it. But what I won't do is I won't be dishonest with you, right? If I had the need to be dishonest, I would prefer just to be quiet. And maybe in my silence, that'll tell you some things. But it was really an experience that early in the morning with a young Bahamian who was really trying to get a sense of things and understand things. He was earnest. And that's why we have to, as people who are been around a little bit long, we've had some experiences in this world, we have to be open to sharing, but we also have to be careful that in our sharing, we try to be forthright, and we try to be objective, and we try to take into consideration the perspectives of other people. Now, to be sure, if I am listening to you and you are not making sense to me, I saw it only could be to me, right? And if you're trying to be belligerent with a point of view that I just regard as nonsensical, I'm not shy. So it may well be that we may find ourselves in a to and fro, et cetera. But with time and age, you come to mellow out a bit, and you ought to take stock. Because it is important that how we handle, deal with each other leaves us better off, with more dignity than not. This text said, watch it now. Don't get too humble, my brother. I was doing some devotions some weeks ago. I was doing some devotions, and I came across a scripture that talks about being very humble, gentle, and patient. For these are worthy of the life of God. Maybe I should say it again, right? So you'd be very humble, gentle, and patient. For these are worthy of the life of God. And I have embraced, this is Ephesians chapter 4. And so I decided that those virtues, since they are worthy of the life of God, are virtues which we all should embrace. It says in the NIV version of it, be completely humble and gentle, be patient, bearing one another in love. And this, you are worthy of the life of God, right? So, I gotta be a little humble, my brother. That's my good friend. Anyways, so I hope that today you better understand UB study, the government public policy. It's called the Recovery and Sustainable Growth Study. The study took account of, it looked at the recommendations of the Economic Recovery Committee and sought to see where there were alignments with what was being contemplated in the study. You know, we looked at, you can, with a model such as the one we have, you can do an unlimited number of scenarios. But for a study that you have to report on, that would be unwieldy. So we had to narrow down to those simulations that could bring about the effect that the government was looking for. But just bear in mind that you can think up all manner of scenarios and you can simulate them. And you always want, when you do a simulation, you always want to do one on the optimistic side and then one on the pessimistic side. So for instance, you don't just do a VAT cut and see what the implications are. You can do a VAT rise, and also then that informs policymakers of, here are implications too, because one day you may come to consider that. And so there's always an optimistic and pessimistic scenario presented in every simulation. So once you see the study, you'll see that for every simulation, and there were 20 plus simulations done. So that's why you see the number 19 came from, the number 20 came from, because there's simulation one that had to do with tourism, simulation two, three, four, five. So all those simulations were run. And when you look at them, you'll see for each simulation, in the appendices, you'll see for each simulation, what's the outcome for value added? What's the outcome for GDP? What's the outcome for employment? What's the outcome for poverty? What's the outcome for the Gini index? What's the outcome for inflation? You'll see that for each scenario. So when you're looking at the graphs, you'll see the graphs are color-coded, right? So you'll see different colors for the graphs. When you're looking at those graphs, what you'll see is one color represents the baseline. So the baseline is, here is what you would be if you could kept doing what you're doing today. That's the baseline. So if you just did what you did today, this is what would be. So the baseline, for instance, in the graph would be blue. So the scenario would then be in red or some other color. And so you could compare the baseline in blue to the scenario in red, and it would tell you what the trending predicted outcome would be for those. And you'll see that for each scenario and so forth. And if you know how to read a graph, and you'll also see tables giving you actual values with respect to those same findings. If you know how to read the graphs and you know how to read the tables, you'll get the findings from the studies, the various simulations that was done. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, so glad you could join us today. I trust you have a wonderful evening. Nahaja Black is up next. God bless you. And we will talk to you again tomorrow. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Chibago Lai, your host. Have a great evening. Everybody come take-